Okay, it started now. Okay, so this is CareView again. I'm talking to Colonel Doris Cobb, and you were in recruitment at Fort Monroe from 65 to 68. Is that right?
Right.
Okay, and it's April 25th, 2005. Okay. Yeah, I didn't want to miss anything. That's why, that's why I interrupted you there real quick.
Oh, okay.
And so you had been in the Army Nurse Corps for a while before you got involved in recruitment. Is that right?
I came. I had been in the Army in 1945.
Okay.
For 18 months.
Uh-huh.
Approximately 18 months. And got out of it and came back in the Army in 1956.
Mm-hmm.
I came back in February of 56, and I went in recruiting in August of 56.
Uh-huh.
And I was in recruiting in Boston for 3.5 years. And then I left recruiting and went to the advanced nursing course down at Fort Sam and did a lot of other things. And in 1964, Colonel Clark had just become the chief of the Corps, asked me to come back on recruiting down in Atlanta
mm-hmm.
as the ANC coordinator
uh-huh.
for recruiting nurses.
Uh-huh.
So we covered the whole Third Army area, which
uh-huh.
is the southeastern corner of the United States.
Uh-huh.
The nurse that was at Fort Monroe had a heart attack, and I was moved from Fort Monroe from Fort McPherson, Georgia, to Fort Monroe to become the chief of the Army Nurse Corps recruiting. So I went up there in 1965, but I had already had experience in recruiting before I went there.
Okay, okay. And was this something that you liked? You liked being involved in recruiting?
No.
No.
I didn't want to go back. Colonel Clark made it sound like I was recruiting would fall apart if I didn't.
And so you were chief of the Army Nurse Corps recruiting, and you were based at Fort Monroe, Virginia.
Right.
Okay.
We were at Fort Monroe for a while, and then we moved out to an old Nike site, and then we moved into Hampton proper in a building. The United States Army Recruiting Command moved into this building on Mercury Boulevard in Hampton.
Okay.
So we were not at Fort Monroe the entire time.
Okay. Okay, and so you worked with USAREC, with the U.S. Army Recruiting Command.
Right.
Okay. Now, because I'm not in the Army, and I've been getting confused about, and I've tried to get a couple people to explain it to me, but I always end up confused.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly how this was organized, when recruiting switched and it stopped being done through the Office of the Surgeon General, it became the responsibility of USAREC.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and that was USAREC. Was that tied to the Continental Army Command?
It was a separate command, but it was located at CONARC, at the Continental Army Command at Fort Monroe.
Okay.
It was located there, but it was not part of CONARC. Although all, you know, U.S. commands came under CONARC eventually.
Okay.
It was a separate command. The U.S. Army Recruiting Command had its own commanding officer.
Okay.
Nursing, up until that time, Army Nurse Corps recruiting had been in a state of flux, because when I was in recruiting up in Boston, Mass.,
mm-hmm.
in 56, we came under the First Army Surgeon.
Okay.
And under the Surgeon General. But in some locations across the United States, the nurses had already come under recruiting. They were located with recruiting.
Uh-huh.
We were separately. We were in Boston. We were in a separate location. We were not associated with recruiting per se.
Uh-huh.
We were still under the Surgeon General.
Uh-huh.
Quite a few of the areas were under the Surgeon General, but as I said, some of them in some areas had already gone under the recruiting and were
okay.
located with recruiting.
Okay. And then they moved them all to USAREC.
I'm trying to think. Colonel Farabee, Connie Farabee, was the chief of recruiting at USAREC when we sent the first... The first nurse at at Youth's Rec, and I'm trying to think. She must have been there a couple of years before Colonel McAlpin became the chief of the recruiting nursing division.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we came under, let's see, I went in 65. Maybe it was about 63 that nursing, a nurse was assigned as the chief of Army Nurse Corps recruiting at USAREC.
Uh-huh. Okay. And they did all of this with moving it to USAREC because of the buildup for Vietnam?
Right.
Okay. They
right.
sort of anticipated that this was going to be a long-term...
Well, and in order to make everybody, all of the procurement nurses, as we called them at that time, recruiting counselors, we call it procurement counselors. To give them all the same kind of a background and the same kind of support, because when you're out in the when we were sent to the Surgeon General, we were sometimes downtown with no facilities available to us, out in an office completely away from any from any medical support or from any recruiting support. And so in order to give us the support of the using the enlisted recruiters out in the field, because we had many more male, well, I shouldn't say male, enlisted recruiters out in the field, they helped us, but they didn't have to. They did. They did it out of the generosity of their heart. And so once nurse recruiting came under the direction of the recruiting command, then we got all the support we needed from them.
Okay.
Facility-wise and everything else. And we had a lot more people that were willing to help us. Publicity, for instance, and so forth.
Okay. And the USAREC is the group that was responsible for all of the Army recruiting.
Right.
Right. Okay. Okay. So when you, let's see, so you were the, I guess, the top person in Army recruiting, or Army Nurse Corps recruiting.
From 65 to 68.
Okay, okay. And who did you work with at Fort Monroe or in Hampton?
What do you mean?
Well, I guess what individuals or like, who did you have to report to or who reported to you? Or?
Well, to begin with, when I first went to USAREC, as I told you, Colonel McAlpin had, had been the chief there. Well, she had a heart attack, and so I was moved up to, from Fort McPherson to USAREC. She was, when she returned to active duty, she came back on active duty. They thought when they sent me there that she would retire. So she became the chief again in her mind. but I had been assigned to the job by Colonel Clark telling me that it was my job and I was to do whatever I felt was best for recruiting. Colonel, I deferred to Colonel McAlpin because she was the current lieutenant colonel. I was a major at the time. But she did eventually retire. And then I became the chief.
Okay.
But I reported, I was in the recruiting division. We had certain different recruiting divisions. And this was the recruiting division that I came under. And I reported to the colonel who was in charge of that, and then, of course, to the commanding general.
What other kinds of things did USAREC do? If there was a recruiting division, what kind of other divisions were there?
Oh, yeah, the physical standards.
Okay.
We had a group, a section that took care of complaints. We had a legal officer. Whatever you, we had a support division that provided supplies and so forth. We had a public relations division.
Okay. Okay. And so then recruiting was one of the divisions along with all of these. Okay. And so there was a colonel was
that was in charge of the total program, and that included the enlisted program, the WAC program, the because at that time, the WACs were still a separate corps, the Women's Army Corps. They're part of the total enlisted force. They're not a separate corps anymore.
Okay.
Their female officers become part of the, for instance, if they're JAGs, they're just part of the JAG.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And before that, they had been part of the Women's Army Corps.
Uh-huh. Okay. And then who did you have working under you in USAREC? Did you have Army nurses or enlisted people?
No, I was by myself at USAREC. I had a secretary.
Uh-huh. Okay. Let's see, and how did you decide what kinds of things needed to be done, you know?
Well, we worked with the Surgeon General's office.
Okay.
I don't mean the Surgeon General's office, the Chief Nurse's office in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And there was first an office there, Colonel Doris Ledbetter, who was in charge of the procurement division. They worked primarily with numbers.
Uh-huh.
That we gave them the sent them the applications, and they either accepted or rejected the application.
Mm-hmm.
But they would come in and tell us how many people they needed.
Okay.
And what kinds of people they needed.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it was then when we started the direct appointment for an individual to volunteer for Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
We also had special programs for nurse anesthetists,
mm-hmm.
because we needed a lot of nurse anesthetists in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
And but we worked in cooperation with the nurses in the procurement office.
Okay.
First Colonel Ledbetter, and then it was Colonel Kishbaugh, Barbara Kishbaugh. And they would tell us what they needed, and then we would go from there and try to devise programs. Now, they had to work with the Surgeon General to get some programs, like the Warrant Officer program had to be approved by the Secretary of the Army.
Uh-huh.
Because that was taking spaces from somewhere else in the Warrant Officer program.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And you said the Warrant Officer program was basically designed to get more men in?
Was to give the men who had graduated from three-year programs.
So it's
a place to back in the military, since we were accepting baccalaureate degrees.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so this was a way to get men who had a diploma?
In the draft, and who already had a diploma in nursing.
Okay. Okay. Hmm. Okay. What about, you know, the workings with the ad agencies? I asked Marion Kennedy about this a little bit, and she remembered some things that she said you might know more about what ad agencies the Army Nurse Corps worked with.
Well, the only one I can remember is AIRS.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember the initials because we just call them AIRS.
Uh-huh.
But I did do help with publicity. I can remember going to New York in the wintertime doing some photos for a book that we were producing.
Uh-huh.
For posters.
Uh-huh.
Things of this kind.
Uh-huh. And how did that work? You know, if you had the ad agency, did they come up with ideas? Did the Army come up with ideas?
Well,
you know,
we would tell them we needed a poster.
Okay.
And then they would tell us what they could do.
Uh-huh.
We approved the copy.
Uh-huh.
That went into the, for the book or on the poster.
Mm-hmm.
We provided the technical support for uniform to make sure the uniform was correct.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I was there, for instance, in Central Park in the wintertime. to make sure that the uniform was correct. They weren't trying to be like the uniform above the knees and all this, because we wanted them to meet the standards that we were requiring the people to meet once they got on active duty.
Uh-huh. And did they use real nurses or did
they
use models?
Well, sometimes they use models. Sometimes we use real people.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And were they the ones who decided basically who to use or...
Most of the time, they worked with model agencies and selected the individual.
Mm-hmm. as, because I've seen some of the brochures, yeah, there was one that says, you know, has a picture of a bunch of nurses on the front, and it says a new career, U.S. Army Nurse Corps. See, there was one that has a, she looks really young, the girl in the front. She's got a, her white uniform on and her nurse's hat, and it says, the bright adventure of Army nursing. And I think they printed that one in 69 and then 71. Mm-hmm. And then I've seen, there was one that was called Pride, Prestige, and Professionalism, the World of the Army Nurse Corps. And it's basically, it was a brochure of pictures of uniforms. you know, the dress blues, the greens, the summer, the winter, you know, all of the different uniforms. Do you remember making any of those or working on any of those?
Well, if it said 69, I would not have been there.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember really and truly whether we did the one on uniforms or not.
Uh-huh.
We weren't so much interested in uniforms at that point. We were more interested in numbers.
Uh-huh.
I know we had they came down and wanted us to start have a program, 1,000 nurses, recruit 1,000 nurses.
Uh-huh.
That was not very successful either. Because we didn't get 1,000 nurses.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm trying to think. It was called Angel something. But I cannot remember what the name of what it was.
There was an Operation Nightingale?
That's it.
Okay.
Operation Nightingale.
Okay. Uh-huh. And did that run basically through the whole war, or was that from, I think it started in early 63, and then did it cut off at a certain point, or did it just kind of keep going?
It just kept going.
Okay. Okay. Let's see, I've ran across ads that, like one-page ads that were in the American Journal of Nursing, Nursing Outlook, and sometimes, you know, it would be like a, have a picture of a nurse or something, and then have a little bit of information. And sometimes they would even have a little form you could put your name and address and mail it in and get information on the Army Nurse Corps. Did you remember those? I think Ayer produced some of those.
Well, we did do some of those, so probably because those little ads came into us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that we did, was send out an awful lot of the literature.
I've seen the ads in those two nursing journals. There was one called Tomorrow's Nurse, but that only ran for a couple years. And then I found one of those ads in Life magazine.
Uh-huh.
In September 67. And I found some in Mademoiselle and Glamour.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember if they were in any other magazines? I just kind of found them by accident or references here, you know, and trying to track them all down. But I wanted to see if that was really, if those were the only places those were placed, or if there were other places, or if you remember.
I was trying to think. I think that's probably the primary ones.
Uh-huh.
Most of the time, we did not have difficulty recruiting men.
Uh-huh.
I can remember that when I was in Boston, for instance, there was a male school of nursing located nearby, and I had no difficulty recruiting men.
Uh-huh.
Because they knew they had to serve, and they preferred to serve as officers rather than as enlisted people.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted to come in and be commissioned.
Uh-huh. Huh. Do you think there was a lot of stereotyping about male nurses at that time?
I don't think so as far as Army nurses were concerned, but probably in the civilian field that might have been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But not so much in the Army?
No, I think most of the nurses accepted the male nurse because many of us had worked with them. Because we had worked with them as enlisted people, because many of them had, during World War II, had to serve as enlisted people.
Uh-huh.
who uh-huh. were drafted and had to serve because they were not being commissioned in the Army Nurse Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had worked with them. I think that they were stereotyped as far as civilian nurses were concerned.
Uh-huh. Do you think maybe the Army was kind of... maybe some men went, male nurses went to the Army to kind of counterbalance that stereotyping, that maybe if you
right.
go to the Army, that people won't think that I'm flighty or whatever.
Yeah, I do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's interesting because there was a lot, you know, percentage-wise, there were a lot more male nurses in the Army than in civilian population.
That's exactly right.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. I talked to a few male nurses who were in Vietnam, maybe 6 or 7.
Uh-huh.
And they all have, you know, interesting stories and things. So I've met some of those. And do you think that's, you know, because males sort of had to come into the Army anyways, was that one of the reasons why?
Well, and one of the reasons is, yes, I think that one of the reasons they had to come in the Army, so they, I mean, they were going to have to be in the military, so they decided to join the Army or the Air Force.
Uh-huh.
And many men were either in psychiatric nursing or in a nurse anesthetist. Mm-hmm. They were nurse anesthetists.
Uh-huh.
And so they, the field in the Army was open.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. In fact, at one time we were getting so many of them as nurse anesthetists, so we weren't leaving any space for female nurse anesthetists.
Uh-huh. Huh. Wow. Let's see. Did you ever, I guess, were you the person who would sit down and talk with the Ayers ad agency, and or were there other people who would sit down, you know, in meetings with them and look at ads?
I assume that our public relations did a lot of the initial work.
Uh-huh.
But when we were working on nurse brochures, then I was the one that did it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Were there ever instances where the ad agency maybe proposed something or had a draft of a brochure or something, and you had to say, no, that doesn't work?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And what kinds of things would make it not fly?
Well, they would try to glamorize it too much.
Uh-huh.
Huh. Go off on sort of on the deep end when we knew it wasn't going to be that way.
Mm-hmm. And so as far as the text...
If you start with the publicity, promising things that can't, you can't follow through on, you're dead from the very beginning.
Uh-huh.
So from the very beginning, you got to tell the story and tell it right.
How would you decide, you know, maybe what kinds of things might be appealing to nurses? Did you ever survey nurses or go and talk to people and say, you know?
Well, when we would have an applicant come in, or when our nurse counselors would go out in the field,
uh-huh.
and you go to the various schools. For instance, when I was in the Boston area, I had visited 95 schools
uh-huh.
in nursing. Colleges and hospital diploma programs.
Uh-huh.
That, and we could, you know, from there we could tell, well, how did you find out about it, about a nurse, an Army nurse career? What makes you think you would like to be in the Army?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. What kinds of things do you think were most appealing at that
well,
time?
Well, a lot of them wanted to travel. They wanted to get away from home.
Uh-huh.
They wanted to go into a specific field, like we had schools with it. Ooh. We had programs for OR nurses, pediatric nurses, you know, mm-hmm. different clinical fields that they could go into.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you graduate from nursing school, you're a generalist.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So some of them wanted to go into a particular
Now, we also have what we call the Registered Nurse Student Program, where a nurse who graduated from a three-year diploma program could get a year of college, full year of college, and get their diploma, get their degree.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm sure you've heard that we had the Army Student Nurse Program. And a lot of kids came into the, young people came into that program for the financial assistance.
So those, that was, you know, I think I read in Sarnecki's book that that was the program that got the most nurses in. Was
the Army Student Nurse Program. Best program we ever had. Much better than the Walter Reed program, in my book, as far as recruiting nurses was concerned. Because we not only paid these kids for 4 years of schooling, but we took 40 or so nurses out of the hospitals and put them in the school at Rain to teach those kids. And so that, and then that that many did not stay on active duty. So it was an expensive program in my philosophy. Having been on recruiting for 7.5 years in my career.
What about recruiting minority nurses? Was there ever a program, you know, to try to attract maybe more African American nurses or more Latino nurses or, you know, anything like that?
No, nothing specific. We went to those schools because I know when I was down in the Third Army area, we used to go to Tuskegee and to Florida State University. Not Florida State, what's the Florida A&M, I guess, was a black college. Tuskegee School of Nursing, or Department of Nursing, was a black school of nursing. We visited them just the same as we did any other programs. I did while I was at USAREC. It was recommended to the general that I go to Puerto Rico and see about the possibility of recruiting Puerto Rican nurses. I went to Puerto Rico. I spent 10 days down there. I visited the schools of nursing. I talked to the nursing educators. I found out their training programs. They had a 3-year program similar to those in America. They use American textbooks, English textbooks. But before, most of the schools, other than Catholic University, most of the schools are government programs. And so the requirement is that they must work for 3 years after they graduate from the program for the government. And they send them out in these little boondocks, little towns, to work, where people only spoke Spanish. And so when they would get ready to decide that they wanted to come in the Army, they would... we would give them a test, and they could not pass the English test. And we had some come to the, well, I was the class advisor to the basic nurse program here at Fort Sam, from 69 to 72. And we had some Puerto Rican nurses come into that program who could not pass the basic orientation course. And we had to send them over to Lackland to the language school, so that they could come back and take the basic nurse course. Their English proficiency just wasn't that good. But we tried to work with them as best we could. But we decided it was not a feasible idea to send a nurse to Puerto Rico on a routine basis to try to recruit nurses.
Did you ever have, like, training sessions for the nurse counselors?
Yes.
And Where were those held? Or?
First, we started sending them to the, I went in 1956 to the Indianapolis. They had a WAC recruiting course.
Mm-hmm.
And we sent, let's say, I think in our first class we had six nurses and two Army Medical Specialist Corps officers
mm-hmm.
in the class. And we were in the class with the WAC, so that's where we learned all of the what you're supposed to know about recruiting.
Uh-huh.
And we continued to send out nurses to that course. Now, whether they continued to do that today or not, I don't know.
Uh-huh. But they did do that?
Yes.
During Vietnam? Huh. And was it every nurse recruiter had to go to this training session? Or?
Well, I am trying to think because it was... The WAC program continued in Indianapolis, so I'm assuming that they still all went there.
Mm-hmm. And so it was specifically set up for WAC recruiting, but they could send a nurse there and she would get sort of general recruitment information or training?
Mm-hmm. And they had some program on nurse recruiting, how it differed from WAC recruiting.
Uh-huh. Hmm. That's interesting. Huh.
I think it was a month that we went there. I'm trying to think. I just saw the certificate a little while ago. I was going through to see what my letter, the medal that I got when I left recruiting, what it said about recruiting, and I'm trying to think. And I just ran across the one that said I attended that course.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But we were the first, there were, as I said, six nurses and two AMSCs. And you know what an AMSC is?
That's the Army Medical Specialist Corps.
Right.
It's like physical therapist.
Hey, you're going to know more about the Army and most military.
Well, it's taken a long time to get all this straight. All the abbreviations can really mess you up if you don't know what they mean.
Why did you get interested in this?
Well, when I was an undergraduate, I'm in the history program.
Yeah, that's what you're
And I've always liked women's history, and I've always liked history of the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized one day that I can put the two together. And so I got interested in medical history then, just in, you know, history of nursing and that sort of thing. And it's just kind of been a long progression, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but going through the Army Nurse Corps archives and learning all the abbreviations, and I think what I spent to figure out what USAREC meant, it just kept saying USAREC on all these papers over and over, and I spent an entire day trying to figure out what that stood for. I could not figure that out. Nobody bothered to put the whole thing in because everybody just knew, you know, what it meant, except me. So, yeah, figuring it all out has been long. It's a long process. But it's interesting.
Well, it'll be interesting to read what you write when you get through with it.
Uh-huh. It just seems to me, kind of looking back on it, and that's why I want to talk to people who actually did the recruiting, that with Vietnam, that there would have been a whole set of different issues maybe that recruiters didn't have to deal with in World War II or, you know, in earlier periods, especially, you know, as the anti-war movement builds up.
Well, now, you know that during World War II, the Red Cross did the recruiting.
Yeah. So it wasn't... You know, the Army doing,
because
I guess.
The way I got into the Army
mm-hmm.
in 1945 was that the Red Cross came to the School of Nursing
mm-hmm.
and they had a senior student reserve program.
Uh-huh.
Which meant that when I graduated from nursing school, I would join one of the two services, which was the Army or the Navy.
Uh-huh.
And so I had joined that program when I was a senior student.
Mm-hmm.
And when I graduated, I got a letter from them saying, which branch? They didn't say, do you want to go?
Uh-huh.
Which branch do you want to go into?
Uh-huh. And why did you pick Army?
Well, as my director said to me, she was getting ready to go to the, in the Navy. She said, why did you select the Army? And I said, because I'd like to travel. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the Navy's going to send you anywhere but Portsmouth, Virginia. That's where she spent her career.
Wow.
Her time on active duty.
Uh-huh.
Well, I got to England, France, and Germany.
Uh-huh.
So in a year and a half, so that sort of gives you an idea where the nurses were going.
Uh-huh. Do you think with Vietnam that the controversy about the war itself affected the way you had to recruit nurses?
It did in the latter stages of the war.
Uh-huh.
It did not in the early 60s, for instance, 65 to 68.
Uh-huh.
It was not that much.
Uh-huh.
But in the latter stages, there was more political fallout.
Uh-huh. And how did that change recruiting?
Well, I don't know, because I left in 68.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I left and went to Thailand because I had volunteered to go to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of going to Vietnam, I went to Thailand.
Did you think the women's movement affected the way recruiting had to be done? Yeah, with people changing their ideas about, I guess with the 60s, that women can be more than a teacher, a nurse, or a secretary, that you could do all kinds of other things as well.
Oh,
with
yeah,
that.
Because certainly it made a difference, because young women had many more fields that they could go into.
Uh-huh.
And nursing schools suffered first and
uh-huh.
foremost. That was the reason for the RAIN program.
Uh-huh.
Was to try to bring in more students into the nursing field.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Did you sort of have to convince any young women that nursing was still, an okay field for a girl to do? Or, did you run into any of that? Because she could, do any kind of other thing now. Did you have to say, well, nursing's not so bad?
Not really, because I don't believe in trying to convince people of something. If you want to do it, fine, but... If a person told me they wanted to be a doctor, then by all means go into pre-med and become a doctor.
Uh-huh.
I think nursing is a good field.
Uh-huh.
I don't regret that I ever went into it. I had a varied career. I did not have to stay 20 years in one location.
Mm-hmm.
Which I had classmates that did. Some of them even stayed 30 years in the same spot.
Uh-huh.
And I guess from my short experience in World War II, I had gotten the wanderlust because I think a 3-year tour in a place was pretty good.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have a 3-year tour in a lot of them, but...
Huh.
So it's just what people like, and now we had lots of fathers in the military, for instance, who wanted their daughters. I can remember when I was in Okinawa, and because I had been in recruiting, the nurses and everybody that wanted to talk about recruiting to me,
uh-huh.
to talk to me, and. I would find fathers who wanted their daughters to join the RAIN program
mm-hmm.
because it would help to save them some money
mm-hmm.
to have their daughter's 4-year education paid for.
Uh-huh.
But when I talked to the daughter, they weren't the least bit interested in joining going to the RAIN program.
Uh-huh.
And I said to the father, she has to serve the obligation, not you.
Uh-huh.
So don't push her. If she doesn't want to do it, don't push her, because You don't want her to fail.
Uh-huh.
And you don't want her to end up owing the Army for something that she doesn't want to pay for.
Uh-huh.
So if she ever comes around and says, yes, she'd like to do it, then fine. But I wouldn't push a single one of those girls.
Uh-huh.
Contrary to father's wishes. Some of them had been military brats and had moved from place to place, and they wanted to put down roots.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Well, you know, don't join the Army and Earth Corps if you want to put down roots.
Did you have to deal with any kind of stereotyping about Army women? You know, when you were in recruitment or in the 60s, were there still those, you know, awful stereotypes?
No, not as much as some of the women that had in World War II.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it kind of died down.
Although I did up in 19, oh, I guess it was 57 or 58, one of the students at Mass General wanted to join the Army Student Nurse Program.
Mm-hmm.
And she took the papers home for her father to sign them, and her father said he wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew what nurses did during the war and, you know, how loose they were and all this kind of stuff. And I said, well, I was in the Army during World War II. Not a long time, but I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I have yet to see one single nurse and one man doing anything that they shouldn't have been doing.
Uh-huh.
So it's my contention that only two people know what went on between a man and a woman. And those are the two that are involved.
Uh-huh.
I said, men like to talk.
Uh-huh.
I had worked on a ward with men, and I could hear them talking.
Uh-huh.
I said, so tell your dad if he can come and tell me, give me the name of the man and the woman that he knows that all this occurred with, then I'll agree with him.
Uh-huh.
She came back with the papers signed.
he gave up that argument, huh?
Yeah, he gave up on that argument. But men did like to talk.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, if an enlisted man said I had slept with a nurse, that was a feather in his cap.
Mm-hmm.
And he liked to talk, but who knows
mm-hmm.
whether he did or didn't.
Hmm.
But the same thing was happening on the civilian front. The women that stayed at home, their husbands were gone.
Mm-hmm.
Look how those women got talked about, a lot of them.
Huh.
Men came home from the service and divorced the wives right away because the women were involved with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. So it's maybe I've got blinders on.
Well, maybe not.
But I just don't see things. I didn't see things, I guess, that other people thought they saw.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Hmm. What were the biggest problems that you had to deal with when you were at USAREC?
Money. To do the job.
Mm-hmm. Did it cost a lot to work with the advertising agencies and come up with the, you know, pamphlets and the brochures? And
well, I guess it did. I didn't get involved in the money portion of it because the PR people or the, what do you call them, the operations people, I suppose, were the ones that were paying the bills.
Mm-hmm.
But the number of brochures that we needed, sometimes we couldn't get because of the lack of funds.
Mm-hmm.
The travel, recruiting involved a lot of travel.
Uh-huh.
I traveled all over the United States visiting the Army Nurse Corps counselors
uh-huh.
out in the field. Attending conventions of the American Nurses Association. The National League for Nursing, things of that kind.
Mm-hmm.
But money was probably the biggest expense because most of the money was going there for the war.
Mm-hmm.
As it should have for the... Can't fight a war without weapons and ammunition and things of that kind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What kinds of things did you do on a daily basis?
Process applications, send out information, work on statistics, work on different kinds of programs.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to the counselors.
Mm-hmm. Were there any particular areas that were more successful in recruitment than other areas, or, you know, regions of the country, or urban versus rural, or, you know, things like that?
Yes, urban areas were more successful.
Mm-hmm.
They have more, where you have a larger population of nurses, the recruiting was better.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I had been in Boston, there were more nurses per square foot in the New England area than there were in some of the other areas of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I recruited more nurses up there.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't to say that I did a better job than anybody else. It was just that there were more nurses and there were more... And even though there were more nurses, the pay scale in New England was not as high as it was in some of the other areas.
Hmm. Was Army nursing comparable to civilian nursing in pay?
No. It was in New Hampshire.
Uh-huh. And do you mean the Army paid more or paid less?
Paid more.
Paid more?
Mm-hmm. Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont were not high-paying areas.
Uh-huh.
Massachusetts was better. And
uh-huh.
Then as you went down into Connecticut and Rhode Island, those... out of Boston, because
mm-hmm.
the nurses from the New England areas would come to Boston to work
mm-hmm.
or to go to school.
Mm-hmm. And that was during Vietnam or during 65?
That was back between 52 and 56.
Oh, okay.
56 and 60.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that the same thing held true.
Uh-huh.
Because the New England area didn't change that much.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. A lot of those areas just, it's always a comparison, but when I was in Vermont, New and 50, during the 56 area, one of the recruiters, enlisted recruiters, said, well, we can't get any publicity for you. When I was going to be in the Burlington, Vermont area, and I said, why not? And he said, well, the editor is opposed to the recruiting of nurses to go to other areas.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, see if you can make an appointment with me. And I went in and talked to him, and I said, in your newspaper, every time I look at it, you have pictures and articles about all of the enlisted men that have enlisted from this area.
Mm-hmm.
I said, who do you think's going to take care of them if they get sick?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you feel that you have an obligation to provide some nurses also to help take care of them? He said, I hadn't thought about that. So he started giving us a little publicity when we'd go up there.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a mindset, I think, in some of those smaller areas, rural areas, because I certainly consider Vermont a rural
mm-hmm.
area, that we keep what we've got.
Uh-huh.
But they had to send the men because the men were being drafted.
Uh-huh. Was there, read that there was a plan, though it was never put into action, but that there was a plan developed to draft female nurses during Vietnam.
Well, the same thing was talked about during World War II. We weren't, if there was a plan to develop, we weren't told about it at the recruiting command.
Did the recruiting command ever, talk about it themselves, that, maybe if we could draft nurses, we wouldn't have this problem?
No.
I guess why was that never thought of, or why did they never really consider that?
Well, if you talk, first of all, it would have been a bill to recruit one specific group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have a bill to recruit one specific group of men. We recruited, all men were eligible for the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make any difference what their profession was.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, to ask the members of Congress, many of whom were married to nurses, where were we going to put the stop room?
Mm-hmm.
Men who were married and had children were being drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So was that going to eliminate women who had children?
Mm-hmm.
So, there were just too many problems involved.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing is true in drafting women, per se.
Mm-hmm.
How many congressmen you think are going to pass a bill that will draft their wives or their children, their daughters or their granddaughters?
You think it was something, just the idea of women in the service? I mean, because they were drafting their sons and their nephews, but...
Well, I think they always felt that men had an obligation to serve the country.
Mm-hmm.
But, we've had women that served from revolutionary times.
Uh-huh.
If you go back and read the history of nursing.
Uh-huh.
So, it wasn't unusual for women to be working with the military.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't know why they felt it was... They shouldn't have women.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Huh. What about the Recruiting and Career Counseling Journal?
The what?
The Recruiting and Career Counseling Journal. It's like a little magazine that came out, or a little journal that came out maybe every month, I think.
It must have started after I... left.
Okay. Did anything change from 65 to 68 as far as recruitment? I guess you needed more numbers, probably.
Pretty much the same programs were going on.
Uh-huh.
Just to get as many as you could. At one time, I can tell you that the Surgeon General took the weight restriction off of nurses.
Mm-hmm.
And we were getting applications for nurses that were like 80 pounds over our maximum,
what
we had allowed previously.
Mm-hmm.
And Colonel Clark went to Vietnam. And they had nurses there that couldn't even get fatigues to fit them.
Uh-huh.
It was so large.
Huh.
So she came back and wanted us to, she said, something's got to be done. And I said, well, Colonel, your physical standards took the weight limit off.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't do it.
Uh-huh.
But I was able to talk my commander into doing it, to putting the weight restrictions back on.
Mm-hmm.
And then that can only be 10 pounds over the maximum. Which was a big leeway anyway.
Uh-huh.
But that was one of the things that did happen.
Uh-huh.
And so for a brief period of time, there was no weight restriction on people.
Uh-huh.
But someone who's 98 pounds over what our maximum was for that height individual.
Uh-huh.
was just absolutely not capable of functioning in, say, in Vietnam or in an army hospital.
It's not healthy.
No, it isn't. They weren't healthy, and they weren't able to function. You put someone who's 98 pounds over the weight, and as I said, we already had pretty good weight maximum that for a person. And if you're 98 pounds over that, you just cannot function in the heat.
What?
Go ahead.
No, it's all right.
Well, I was just going to say, so that we did at the recruiting command put the weight restriction back on as far as women were concerned.
Did you have a lot of people who maybe were interested in the Army Nurse Corps, but wanted to just go, just wanted to, or I guess were just interested in it because they wanted to go straight to Vietnam?
Yeah, we had a lot of people who came on when it was guaranteed assignment to Vietnam. However, I'm sort of personally opposed to guaranteed assignments to a foreign location, and particularly a wartime, because when I was here in the with the basic course, I was able to see some of the people come through the program, the advanced, the basic program, who were just not capable of functioning in a wartime zone. And they should not have been given a guaranteed assignment. I know I worked very diligently to try to get one young lady off orders and was unable to do it. And when she got the surgeon, well, she had lied on her physical, her physical history. She had not said that she had been in a psychiatric hospital where she, and she had been. So I tried to get Washington to say, hey, this person does not belong in the Army. She has told the tale, and therefore we can discharge her now. Didn't do it. Let her go to Vietnam. And the person that didn't get it changed was the one that ended up with her in her hospital. So she writes to me and tells me all this. And I just delighted in saying to her, you are the one that didn't keep her from going. Because I worked as hard as I could to keep her from going. All I needed was from you to say that she had lied, because she was the one up in Surgeon General's office. So she went over there. She's a problem. Now we end up with her as a medical retirement. For the rest of her life. And we could have gotten rid of her at the basic level, at basic course. That to me is something that why I don't, I'm not a believer in guaranteed assignments to a war zone. I think you need to have that cooling off period there and let someone else evaluate them in a military situation.
Did you have people who were the kind of the other side of the coin and said, I'll join the Army Nurse Corps, but I definitely do not want to go to Vietnam?
No. I don't recall anyone saying that. They didn't want it. I didn't ask for it as a first assignment, but they knew that if the war continued, there's a possibility they would go. But no, I don't recall anyone ever saying, no, I absolutely will not go.
And a lot of these people who ended up going to Vietnam were quite young, weren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, comparatively.
Just new graduates from School of Nursing.
Was that a problem or a benefit?
You mean with them going?
Well, the fact that they were so young, I guess, was that problematic?
Yes, I think so.
Uh-huh.
I think if they had been seasoned in an Army hospital for even 3 months,
mm-hmm.
it would have been a help to the individual, because when you're trying to get used to a new outfit and a new job and a new location, and it's a wartime situation all at one time, is a little much.
Uh-huh.
Even for a seasoned nurse.
Uh-huh.
Huh. Now they're having some basic, I overheard them saying recently, for young nurses coming in going to Iraq, that they have a wartime course that they put them through.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. So they're taught more what to expect. Although we took them out in the field in 69, we took them out in the field and showed them how to work in a field hospital, a tent hospital.
Uh-huh. Down at Fort Sam in their basic training?
Uh-huh.
Huh.
But now they have a much more intensive program.
Mm-hmm.
For those that, and they are sending new nurses to Iraq.
Huh. I don't think I'd want that to be my first job.
No, I wouldn't. I don't think.
Huh.
I went to Europe, 3 months after I came into the Army in January, and I went over the 1st of May.
Mm-hmm.
And was on the ship 10 days and landed in England the day after the war ended in Europe.
Wow.
So my time in England, France, and Germany was spent working with patients that had been brought back, and then it got to the Army of Occupation in Germany.
Uh-huh.
Huh. So at least I had some experience with patients coming back from the war zone
mm-hmm.
before I got to Germany.
Uh-huh.
Before I got to Germany.
Uh-huh. Hmm. Wow, that's interesting. I wish I could sit down and show you some of these ads and see if you remembered any of them, if any of them look familiar.
I was going to ask you, can you make a picture of them and put them on the, send it to me email?
Yeah, I have a bunch that I could send you.
Okay.
And some of them are, I try to make the file size small so it's not doesn't crash my computer when I open it, but I can send you some of those. And great, yeah, that would be good. Because I've shown some of these pictures to Marion Kennedy and some to General Hayes and some to Betty and Tila.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll, sometimes we'll look at them and I'll say, is this a nurse or a model? And everybody's got a different opinion. sometimes there'll be pictures, kind of like candid pictures in a brochure of a classroom setting or something, and there'll be a person that somebody knows, so you'll know that that's a real nurse. But then some of the other ones, so one person will say, oh, she's definitely a model, and then somebody else will say, no, she looks like a real nurse. And I don't guess it matters. It's just interesting that nobody knows. Nobody knows who she is.
Well, when are you planning to have this dissertation done?
I hope to be done next summer, not this coming summer, but hopefully, about a year from now to have it all written and, going through the whole defense process. But we will see.
Have you, by any chance, talked to the nurse at the history?
Yeah, several times. I've been over there. I've actually met two nurse historians. I've been doing this for so long. I met Major Peterson first, Jennifer Peterson, and then Major Scott, Charlotte Scott. So I've gone through all the archives there, and I need
is
to go.
Scott the one that's there now?
Uh-huh. Yeah, Charlotte Scott. She's from Arkansas, so she's got a southern accent.
Well, I met one that's there now.
Uh-huh.
She came down when one of the POWs from the Philippines died, had a funeral, and she was here for that.
Huh. Huh. One of the nurses from World War II that had been
yes.
in the Philippines? Wow.
Mm-hmm. But, what was the other girl's name? Cox?
Yeah, Deborah Cox. I think Deborah. She was there before Jennifer Peterson, I think.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And then now it's Scott.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Peterson, I guess I didn't know.
Mm-hmm. And she got transferred somewhere. I think she's somewhere in New England now. I'm not sure. Huh. Yeah, well, I appreciate this. I'll send you some of those pictures. I'll send them in a couple emails so, you know, each one is not so big. But I'll send you some of these and try to tell you when they were in magazines so you'll know the years and things.
Okay.
And see if any of them look familiar or if you know anything more about them. If you remember anybody that you may have worked with, like at the advertising agencies or, you know, anybody else that you think I should talk to, I'd appreciate it. You know, anything that you remember or you think might be helpful.
Well, I was trying to think of some of the nurses that were on recruiting
mm-hmm.
at the time.
Yeah, that would be good.
But some of them are not, they're not better off mentally than I am.
I've talked to a couple recruiters. I talked to Betty and Tila,
mm-hmm.
and I've talked to, there was one male nurse who came back from Vietnam and then went into recruiting and was stationed at Beckley, West Virginia.
Yeah.
Kind of in that region. And then I talked to Audrey McLaughlin, who was at Pittsburgh a little bit before Vietnam, like
Audrey
60
was
to 63.
One of my recruits.
Oh, really?
When I was up in Boston. Uh-huh.
Huh. Yeah, she said she lived in Boston for a while.
Yeah. She was a student at Boston College.
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't, she wanted to come in on the registered nurse student program.
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't complete it in a year because of, at Boston College, because of the, all the religious courses they require because she was Catholic.
Uh-huh.
And so I said, are you dedicated to going to Boston College or would you go somewhere else? Well, I had just finished my master's at Columbia.
Uh-huh.
So I called the gal that had been my advisor down at Columbia and I said, would you talk to her? And she said, yes. So she went down to Teachers College and they accepted her and she completed her baccalaureate there.
Hmm. So you recruited a recruiter?
Yep.
Huh.
They say you have to recruit your replacement.
Uh-huh.
So I did it.
Uh-huh. Wow. Yeah, I talked to her last week, I think. Huh. Oh, and I just found one other note to myself here. Do you remember anything about a publicity group called Ketchum, McLeod, and Grove?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great. What did they do? I found a note in Army Nurse Corps archives that said that they coordinated some trip that two nurses were going on that had been in Vietnam. I think one was Julie Kleebaum. I forget the other one's name, but they went around the country to different places kind of on a recruiting trip. But that's all I know that they did. It was just kind of a short note in the archives.
Well, I remember the name of Ketchum, and they must have, maybe they're the ones who replaced Ayers.
Well, I think they were before Ayer, I think. They did this tour thing in 1965. And as far as I can tell, Ayers came in about 67.
Well, but then we would have worked with them, too.
Uh-huh.
But Julie, what, Cleborn?
Kleebaum, I think.
Kleebaum. Did you, have you talked to her?
No, I haven't found her. I just found this note that says she went on this tour around the country.
Mm-hmm.
I think visited the White House, maybe talked with Mrs. Johnson.
I don't remember that tour, but I do remember the Ketchum name now that you mention it.
Uh-huh. You remember what they did in recruiting? Or?
Well, they must have been the publicity advertising agency previous to Ayers then.
Uh-huh. Would they have come up with ads as well?
Yes.
Okay, so they would have...
They would have done exactly the same thing.
Okay. Huh.
Now, I know that when Colonel Tierney came back from Vietnam, she was honored as one of the 10 American women, and it was in Detroit.
Who was that, Colonel? Who?
Marion Tierney. She had been the chief nurse in Vietnam.
Huh.
And I was at recruiting command at that time, and Colonel Clark asked me if I would go and represent the Army Nurse Corps at this celebration. It was at Cobo Hall. Never forget that.
Hmm.
And it was a lovely affair. They had one national person, I think, and one international and 10 national, 10 people. And Marion Tierney was one of the 10 that was honored.
Uh-huh. And she had been chief nurse in Vietnam?
Uh-huh.
Huh.
And she had been in an airplane accident and had helped to rescue some of the people that were injured in the accident.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Now, whether it was true or not, she always said she was the most decorated American Army nurse in the Vietnam era.
Mm-hmm.
So she might have been. Because she had served during World War II also.
Hmm. Do you know what year it was she got this award?
No, but it must have been, let's see, I was at recruiting command, so it must have been about 67, 68. I left in June of 68, so it must have been about 67.
And from recruiting from USAREC, you went to Fort Sam Houston?
So no, I went to Detroit.
Oh, okay.
To Detroit, Michigan.
Uh-huh.
And just represented the Army Nurse Corps at that event.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant your next assignment after USAREC.
After USAREC? Mm-hmm. No, I went to Thailand.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And you were there for a year?
About 18 months.
18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you said you went to Fort Sam Houston, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And you were involved in helping...
I was the class advisor to the basic orientation course for Army nurses and Army Medical Specialist Corps officers.
Hmm. And so what kinds of things did you do in that assignment? Were you...
Well, we had the basic nurses, the new nurses just coming on active duty, teaching them all of the how to be an Army officer, and something about the Army and about nursing in the Army as it differed from civilian life. And then, as I said, we took them out in the field and showed them how to they learned to map read. Do all kinds of things that military officers are supposed to know.
Mm-hmm. What were the differences between Army nursing and civilian nursing?
It wasn't the difference. It was the difference in the paperwork. Let's put it that way. How we keep records as compared to the records that you keep in civilian hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Were there other differences?
Not really, because, as I said, I came back on active duty in 1956, and I was assigned to Fort Jay, New York, to the hospital at Fort Jay, and I didn't have any difficulty working with in nursing care. So I don't think there's that much difference in the care that you give to patients, just in the difference in how we do things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in an army hospital, when a patient is able to get up and make his bed, he gets up and makes his bed.
Uh-huh.
Civilian hospital, you don't ask a patient to get up and make their own bed.
Right.
So the dependents didn't make their own beds either.
Mm-hmm.
So I got them all to making their own beds. I said, your husband, if he were in here, he'd be making his bed. So I had them all make those that could.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that probably wouldn't go over too well at city hospital here.
No, it probably wouldn't at the city hospital. That's the difference.
It might be good for some patients to get up and make their bed.
Well, that's good for those people.
Yeah.
They were just lying there.
Uh-huh.
And it was good for them to get up and get a little exercise.
Uh-huh.
A little different than civilian hospital now. They're out of the hospital the next day. Well, they're doing the same thing in the military hospital.
Uh-huh.
You have a baby today, tomorrow you're gone.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, let's see. I'm going to go through this and try to see if, you know, as I go through my notes and everything, if there's anything I'm still confused about or something I've forgotten to ask you, then I'll give you a call.
Okay.
I have to send you a consent form that Indiana requires. You know, it's like Institutional Review Board or Human Subjects Committee. You know, if you do research with people, then you have to send them a consent form that they sign. That I just have to keep. So I'll stick that in the mail for you. Okay, I'll get that in the mail to you. And I'll get the picture sent to you on email, too.
Yeah, that'd be good, because that way I can see what you're talking about.
Uh-huh. Okay. Great. And if I have any questions or get confused, I'll give you another call.
Okay. Well, good luck with your work.
Well, thanks. And if you think of somebody I need to talk to, by all means, let me know. I'll try to track them down.
Okay. I'll do that.
Okay, well, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Bye.